Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
The shipping season is back in full swing.
Anybody in Wisconsin who's driven on I-90-94, there's just truck after truck after truck. That's your supply chain in motion.
Our transportation expert tells us what's moving and what's not. Plus, the Twin Ports' own supergroup has a new album. We'll catch up with Sarah Kruger and Lanou.
You can see all the flowers strung along the way.
Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
Yeah, they're coming up like flames in the face. There's a show.
Simply Superior news and issues from a superior point of view.
The shipping season is back in full swing.
Anybody in Wisconsin who's driven on I-90-94, there's just truck after truck after truck. That's your supply chain in motion.
Our transportation expert tells us what's moving and what's not. Plus, the Twin Ports' own supergroup has a new album. We'll catch up with Sarah Kruger and Lanou.
You can see all the flowers.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. Every quarter or so, we check in with our resident transportation expert, Richard Stewart, professor of transportation and logistics at the University of Wisconsin-Superior and director of the Transportation and Logistics Research Center. The reason we do is we like talking to him, of course, but also because transportation affects you, whether you drive a car or truck or take a bus or an airplane. And as we discussed the last time you joined us, it affects you even if you didn't do any of those things somehow because somebody used some form of transportation to get things to you. That's called logistics, which is the second part of Professor Stewart's title. And with that, we'll let him explain more. Welcome to Simply Superior, Richard Stewart.
Absolutely delighted to talk with you again, Robin.
So when we last spoke in December or before that, I will admit having ignored that logistics part of what you do, thinking it was either too big of a word for the radio or not as much fun to talk about as planes, trains, and automobiles. But then the supply chain crisis hit and I realized that's what you've been trying to tell us all this time. So have things improved on the logistics front since December?
Well, what we need to think about when we talk logistics and how things are transpiring in a rapidly changing world is that we live in a global economy. So, for example, we've managed to reduce the number of ships sitting out our outside our major container terminal in the port of LA Long Beach, and we've got down under 100 ships now in waiting. However, at the same time, you may have caught the news that Shanghai is in a lockdown over a COVID variant. And that lockdown means that less than 25% of the cargo that typically moves out of Shanghai has actually been shipped. That's going to impact all of the things that we want to buy that are made in China that we decided to outsource over there. They will either be further delayed or they may be just held for some time before they're finally shipped. And in an economy where we've grown accustomed to going on Amazon or any number of other websites and ordering the product, expecting it within days, and usually receiving a pretty good fulfillment from them, this global supply chain issue has continued to impact that ability to get the products to the end users in a timely fashion.
And this is affecting things that we wouldn't necessarily suspect. I think last time you told us that the problem with getting new cars, and then there's a problem with getting used cars too, because the new cars weren't available, wasn't so much the whole body of the car, but the computer chip, which was coming from, again, China or somewhere.
Yeah, that's correct. And we're seeing that in some plastic products where a lot of the plastic manufacturing has shifted to China. We're seeing some of those products being delayed. We're still experiencing, on top of the supply chain delays, we still have tariffs on products coming from China and some other countries. That's impacted us. We just had a, which probably only a few members of the audience caught, but if we remember you and I talking back in 2020, we had a ship run aground in called the Ever Given, go sideways and block traffic. Well, one of her sister ships ran aground the Chesapeake Harbor, and it took them a month to get that ship out of the mud in Chesapeake Harbor outside of Baltimore. They had to actually bring in cranes and take containers off the ship to lighten it up enough to get it to move.
Does this come from overloading the ship, trying to put too much on because there aren't that many ships going, or?
Well, we haven't seen the details of why it ran aground yet, so I can't really answer that. But you did bring up another point, and that is that because we have major delays at some of these ports like L.A. Long Beach, you're just overwhelmed by the volume of containers, cargo has shifted to smaller ports like Baltimore, like Charleston, South Carolina. They're seeing record shipments of containers coming into those ports. The plus side of that for the ports is they're happy to get the business, but anytime you bring in 5,000 TEU ship, that's a container ship with 5,000 containers on it, 20-foot containers on it, when that ship comes in, that's its only port of call. You're going to take 5,000 containers off that ship and put 5,000 on. And if you're getting them out of the port and onto the highways, that's 10,000 boxes that are going to be moving through that community in the space of a few days. That's a lot of additional truck traffic that those ports are not accustomed to.
And your highways, going back to what I said about it, affects you, right? Because you're on that highway trying to maybe actually take a vacation. And what are all these trucks doing out here?
Yeah, the supply chain, we tend to think of supply chains and the transportation and the logistical planning that runs them is happening away from us. But it's very much happening to us. Anybody in Wisconsin who's driven on I-90-94, about the time you reach Madison and start heading north, there's just truck after truck after truck heading from Minneapolis and west. That's your supply chain in motion. That's how we make it work. The logistics does the planning of when the trucks are moved and what distribution centers or warehouses are going to be going to. And then they're going to be moved that first and last mile and ultimately to your house. And that's become more complicated, too, because UPS, FedEx, some of these companies are operating at maximum capabilities, including the U.S. Post Office, who delivers a lot of the products for these companies. And that maximum because there's a labor issue. We simply don't have enough people entering into the trucking industry and the warehouse industry to keep up with demand. These are good jobs. They're not easy jobs, but they're as noble of occupation as any others.
Well, again, on trucking, we earlier talked about the effect of the pandemic on truck drivers. So has that improved any? Is it affecting still truck drivers and other logistics and transportation workers?
Yes, absolutely. It's affecting all of Americans. And just when we think we've got a handle on it, up comes some new variant. My older brother is a medical doctor. I'm not a medical doctor. I have a different doctorate. And we have conversations about this in the he believes it will be with us, like the flu, for a long time to come in varying degrees. and it impacts the drivers. They may get sick, but it also restricts access to some places. And when you can't immediately drop off your load at a warehouse or another area because of access restrictions, or they've got people who've gotten ill and they're unable to open up the warehouse doors and service you right away, that impacts the logistical planning of where that truck is going to be in the next few hours and the next few days. So it has a tremendous ripple effect through the whole economy when facilities are shut down or restricted due to the lingering COVID virus.
Right. And as you just said, Shanghai, which when we last spoke in December or the end of last year, was not on the radar screen for being shut down, but another variant, and they are very much shut down and affecting us right now. We're speaking with Richard Stewart, Professor of Transportation and Logistics at the University of Wisconsin-Superior and Director of the Transportation and Logistics Research Center. We're talking about transportation and logistics, having learned our lesson that both are equally important. So on the transportation front, we are recording this one day after a judge in Florida released the country more or less, or transit agencies, from the mask rule. So how do you think that's going to affect air travel now that people do not have to wear a mask to get on a plane? And I know you always say your crystal ball is a little cloudy, so but, you know, I'm talking about something up in the clouds.
Well, not really in the clouds, because I've flown twice in the past 2 months, once down to Jacksonville, Florida, to tour the port with students and do some other stuff, and another time out to Cleveland to deliver a paper about Great Lakes shipping. And I had no difficulty boarding the plane, flying, wearing the mask the whole time, but that's my personal preference. Others have difficulty with this. All transportation systems need to operate smoothly to be efficient. When individuals decide to disrupt transportation systems for whatever reason, mass can be, once again, logistically, we plan these things to move seamlessly if they follow the schedule. You start to disrupt the schedule and it has ripple effects. So if individuals decide that they're going to become upset because someone doesn't wear a mask or wears a mask and that causes disruption in the planes, that's going to impact flight crews, their hours of service. It's going to have a major ripple effect for that day through the system.
All right. How about our regular transportation part? This is approaching the summer. Once again, crystal ball, do we foresee a busy driving summer? The AAA always has predictions about this. And, you know, maybe if the skies open up, people won't drive as much. What do you think?
I'm going to share a couple of things with you, some new news and other stuff. You talk about the summer, and one of the first indications of the summer up here in northern Wisconsin and northern Minnesota, in Wisconsin's largest port, the great port of Superior, Wisconsin, and Duluth, Minnesota, we got our first saltwater vessel came in last Friday and is busy loading grain to take back to Italy, where they'll probably make pasta that they'll ship back to the United States on another vessel. That's the way the global supply chain works, our global
economy. I know. We could make that here, but okay, yes.
Well, that's a different topic. The way the supply chain works, that's what's happening, and it looks like it's going to be a pretty good shipping year. The recent decision by the administration to require that everything, if at all economically possible, be in the way of infrastructure, use U.S. steel and other products, may result, not immediately, but will result in a resurgence of iron ore trade as steel production in the United States ramps up. But it doesn't automatically result in steel mills going full bore. For instance, right now, one of the major iron ore producing plants on the North Shore of Lake Superior, the North Shore Mining Company that Cleveland Cliffs owns, is shut down. And it's not shut down to a supply-demand issue so much as the Claiming Cliffs is having problems dealing with the royalty tax, which is in place for iron ore production, and they decided to shut down the plant rather than pay the tax. Now, if the price of iron ore goes up because the demand of steel goes up, that plant may reopen, and we'll be sending ships to Silver Bay again. We're starting to see something else. We just heard a presentation made by Jonathan Lamb from Lake Superior Warehouse about the fact that their intermodal terminal, located in Duluth, has been approved for clearing import and export containers by water. That makes the second port on the Great Lakes, Cleveland is the other one, that you can bring containers in and out of the port and clear them by customs coming from overseas and going overseas. So this is a big change. For several years now, there has been regular container service by ship to Cleveland. Now there's the potential to do that coming into the Twin Ports. Now, how much? It's very much in the embryonic stage, but a major hurdle has been cleared through the good work of the Port Authority and others. So we have the possibility of a brand new supply chain opening up to the heartland of America. And when we look at other ports like L.A. Long Beach, totally unable to get containers in and out in a timely fashion, the trips through the Seaway will add some time, but it appears to be, it'll actually be quicker than moving it through L.A. Long Beach and some other highly congested ports.
Well, and you just mentioned that places like Charleston are secondary ports that are becoming more primary because of the backup. And so sounds like we might be part of that.
Yeah, it will probably take a couple years for this to happen. Supply chains don't change overnight. It's very difficult to do that. The logistical planning and everything else that goes into setting up that new supply chain takes a fair amount of time. We probably won't see any major changes for a year or two, but the barriers have been removed. We have an option.
Well, that is good news, but I'm going to challenge you one thing about supply chains changing overnight, because the whole world seems to have changed with the Russian war on Ukraine. You mentioned the our grain going to Italy. I would believe that Italy would normally be a market for Ukraine's grain, which isn't necessarily moving anymore. And that's not even to mention all the sanctions of countless items, you know, from the rest of the world going to Russia. So on the one hand, a rosier summer, you kind of predicted. On the other hand, as this goes on, I would suggest it may have more than a small effect.
A couple of things transpire whenever you have a war. And don't forget, we basically have been at war my entire life, in excess of a century, half a century, and in one place or another. Anytime you have a war, your ports become very difficult to access. Insurance for vessels, for planes, for everything else falls under what we call war risk insurance. So your rates for insurance to come in the place go up. People have probably heard about the Russian military ships have been hit, but there's also merchant ships that have been sunk. The Turkish Navy has recovered mines. I don't know whether they're Ukrainian or Russian mines that have floated up and floated into Turkish waters. These form a major hazard to a merchant ship. So you not only have the war that's impacting the ability of the farmers to grow grain and export it, but even for ships to access ports in the region, a couple of the ships that have been hit by military fire were not going to the Ukraine at all. They were going to Turkey and other ports. And yes, what's going to happen is in the world market, you're going to see grain prices change as the Ukraine, which I can't give you an exact number, but it's a double-digit portion of the world's grain, percentage of the world's grain comes out of the Ukrainian breadbasket. If they are unable to move that product, grain prices will go up. bulk ships will reposition themselves to Brazil or U.S. or wherever Australia the grain is available to haul it. And freight rates may also go up because, as you pointed out, if Italy's getting grain from the Ukraine, and now they have to get more grain from the twin ports or from Brazil, this is going to increase the cost of the grain because of the longer transit times.
Which will increase our cost of pasta back home, which begins to touch on the whole price increase and inflation issue. But you know what? I think we're going to save that one for another show. Throughout all this, and of course with deep, deep respect for the tragedy that's going on in Ukraine, and of course way beyond all the economic impacts is the human toll for which our hearts definitely go out. Any overall optimism, at least from the transportation and logistics front?
Yes, tremendous optimism because of the passage of the infrastructure bill, which can address some bottlenecks that retard freight, may allow us to move in different directions with freight. Now, this isn't a instantaneous change. We've, for multiple presidencies, not invested continuously in our infrastructure. I can't lay that blame on any one party or a president's doorsteps. It's been going on for 40-plus years. Playing catch-up won't happen in a year or two. It's going to take 4 to 5 years to begin to really reshape this infrastructure and rebuild it. But I'm very optimistic that we're going to begin to tackle some long-delayed projects.
Well, I'm going to take that optimistic note and stop right here for now. We've been speaking with Richard Stewart, Professor of Transportation and Logistics at the University of Wisconsin-Superior and Director of the Transportation and Logistics Research Center. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Coming up, a new album from Sarah Kruger and Lenu. If you're familiar with supergroups in the tradition of the Highwaymen or Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, the Twin Ports has its own. It's Lanu, which consists of musicians from Bon Iver, Low, Trampled by Turtles, and Taylor Swift's band, and our own local favorite and the voice of the group, Sarah Kruger. Last summer, they issued their debut album, also called Lanu, and now they've got a second, Fire in My Mind. Here to share some of it and to tell us what's on her mind is Sarah Kruger. Welcome back to Simply Superior, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
So when we last spoke, I asked if success would maybe steal you away from here. And you said, no way. and I'm going to say as proof of that, I will call this winter we just had pretty bad. And if you're still here after that, you're here forever, right?
Right. Yeah, the winters are my favorite, so they can't drive me away.
This one could not have been one of your favorites. So how about the rest of the band? Is the lineup still the same?
Well, you know, the band kind of shifts and changes depending on everyone's availability. And that's one thing that I kind of like being able to perform with Lenu as my moniker. It allows for some flexibility with who's backing me depending on what the show is and who's available to play. But yeah, you know, the last handful of shows that we've done live, it's been the same crew as that first record. And now that this new EP is out, you know, a lot of those guys are on tour with other bands right now. So I'm kind of piecing together other musicians and it's nice to be able to have that flexibility. So, yeah.
Anybody you want to give a shout out to? Alan Sparhawk, for sure, right?
Well, Alan Alan helped me produce these songs that I just released on this most recent record. But he doesn't necessarily play live with me. But yes, and you know, most of the sounds that you hear on that record, I played. So Alan was just mostly doing producing. Which, you know, was hugely influential in the sound of these most recent songs. And every once in a while, when he's able to join me live, he does. And that's always fun. And let's see, I have a show coming up for Homegrown, and it's a group of people that I've never played music with, all Duluth musicians, kind of from Homegrown's past and from groups that used to play in Duluth a lot years and years ago. And I kind of wanted to get some familiar faces that haven't been around this scene for a while back on stage together. So I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Sarah Kruger of Lanou and different lineups of Lanou as we're discussing. So you're mentioning performing. This pandemic thing still seems to be here. So, but you are out performing. How's that working?
Yeah, well, actually my next couple shows that I have are outside. You know, so it still feels like if people want to be able to attend shows and do that safely, there are some options for that, which is nice. But other than that, yes, the shows have gone on, and we've tried our best to stay healthy and make sure that people are coming out to see live music, feel ready to do that, or feel like they have some safe options to do that. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's one of many reasons to look forward to, even if you love the winter, the
summer, right?
So that yeah. We can get out to the live venues again. And I think that actually happened last year. The clubs kind of opened up first with outdoor venues, and then, okay, yeah. The weather changed. They came inside. Oops, we forgot the pandemic is right. Still going on.
Yeah. Yes.
So rather than just talk about it, let's hear something from the EP. What would you suggest?
Let's start with the title track, Fire in My Mind.
And that is about what?
What is it about? Well, it comes from a place of a couple different things that have been on my mind a lot lately. One being this feeling of impending doom with climate change, and the state of our environment. And then another being the ways with which we are very kind of addicted to our phones and our screens, and how it's so much has changed how we interact with each other and our own brain space. So yeah, so the song kind of comes from a place of reckoning with those two things, and really just acknowledging that we can, you know, be intentional with our minds and with how we spend our time and how we foster our creativity and see the world as something that is beautiful and to be celebrated and noted. So,
all right. I'm glad you brought up that beautiful part, because it was actually getting a little depressing. So.
Yeah, right. I know. Yeah.
But here is Fire in My Mind by Lanou.
Coming at black flames in the face.
And that was Fire in My Mind by Lanou. We're speaking with Sarah Kruger of Lanou. Some of your promo materials suggest that your themes range from, it says, the shape of time to the hope we must carry in the face of a crumbling world. So what part of the world or crumbling world is that referring to? Once again, I'll say the pandemic, of course, was going on while you were creating this, but not yet the war in Ukraine.
Right. Yeah. You know, for the most part, I think that's referring to the state of our world environmentally and how that has shifted so quickly and how there's so much uncertainty surrounding what, you know, world we're leaving behind for our future generations and what that might look like. And as humans and non-human entities, how we'll survive and thrive on this planet Earth. And I think I have been in a mind space too, where I'm really, and maybe all of us are really looking at that and learning how to find the beauty in the world that is still here and that we can still really meditate on and note and share in community with each other. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, again, I appreciate the beauty and the hope. But you know what? I think you encapsulated, if there was one word for the times we're going through right now, from all the terrible things that I keep dredging up here or whatever, it's indeed uncertainty, right? I mean, we just don't know what's going to happen, from the war to the environment to the pandemic to, you know, getting up in the morning and beautiful Twin Ports. And is it one of our gray days or maybe it'll be a beautiful day? So
that,
reaching for some optimism.
Yeah.
What else would you like to share?
I think a song that kind of has a hopeful feel to it is What's It Gonna Be? You know, it has kind of an upbeat vibe and it's sort of a, I don't know, sort of a celebration song. Mm-hmm. And yes, the phrase What's It Gonna Be might touch a bit on that idea of uncertainty, but I think everything's always been uncertain and, you know, nothing is promised and that's okay. That's part of being a human.
It's just more evident to us right now with
right,
so much
exactly.
Being
yep. Right. Yep.
Great. Sarah Kruger and Lanou asked the question, what's it gonna be? Not a- And that was What's It Going to Be by Lanou and Sarah Kruger. Sarah Kruger is our guest. Before we forget, where can we find more about the group and the music?
I think the best landing place is probably the website, which is lanoumusic.com, and that's L-A-N-U-E music.com. And you'll find show dates and, you know, more info about the songs and videos and all of that good stuff.
What's to come? I know you've got to celebrate this one first, but we've got the summer and...
Yeah, so it's just some shows throughout the summer, which I'm looking forward to. And then I hope to be back in the studio already by this coming fall and winter. So we'll see what comes from that.
All right. And to take us out, you have a song appropriately entitled Tomorrow.
Yeah, this song, it comes from a place of this idea of having a love for someone in a different life or a past life, how sometimes it feels like either romantically or even as a friendship, you maybe known someone in a past life and you feel this sort of kindred spirit with them. And it's almost like this cyclical feeling, like it's a cycle, like you're coming back to something that you're so familiar with. And yeah, that's kind of where this song comes from. So
great. We've been speaking with Sarah Kruger from the group or supergroup Lanou. Their new album is Fire in My Mind, available at lanoumusic.com. That's L-A-N-U-E music.com. Thank you for joining us, Sarah.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
I've had a change of heart. And I'll hang my head back at the start.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
And Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, I got a mass email the other day, and so did I don't know how many other people in the region, from something called Husky Friends, which appeared to be from the owners of the Husky Refinery in Superior. It was talking about their community outreach, and it even had a furry husky dog mascot and a video. Let's hear a part of it.
We here at Husky want to renew our commitment to the community that has given us so much over the years. That's why we've launched Husky Friends, an initiative to offer free products and services that will provide security and peace of mind for you and your family.
So that's from the Husky Friends video, but later in the day, I got another email, as did many others, from Husky's parent company saying none of this was from them. So, Danny, what's going on here?
Yeah, so this group, which calls itself Modest Proposals, posed as Husky Energy rolling out this fake public safety initiative in Superior, and they rolled it out on the four-year anniversary of the Husky oil refinery explosion. And as you remember, the explosion injured dozens of people and forced many people in the city to temporarily evacuate. And so this group offered residents a chance to sign up for alerts about leaks of toxic hydrogen fluoride gas, promising them a compassion kit containing burn cream and a hydrogen fluoride detector. And a Twin Cities resident and member of this group, Jim Hagen, says the hoax was a satirical attempt to highlight the dangers of the chemical because hydrogen fluoride is a highly toxic chemical and it can be hazardous when released. And he said that they feel like Husky Friends is an accurate portrayal of the disregard Cenovus Energy, the new owner of the refinery, have shown for the communities of Superior and Duluth, telling them that this is basically okay to accept that this chemical is being used in their backyard. Husky was bought by Synovus Energy in a multi-billion dollar deal last year. And Synovus has said that they're in no way associated with Modest Proposals, and that the company said that, it, you know, their safety measures worked to prevent any gas leak or any release of hydrogen fluoride during the explosion, and that they're making upgrades now as they're rebuilding the refinery to make it even safer by adding additional safety measures like water cannons and a water curtain, and this piece of equipment that they're calling a rapid acid transfer system, which would transfer any of that chemical or acid to another holding tank if there were a release. And so they think they're taking all of the precautions to prevent this type of incident, but this group, you know, disputes that. And they also claim to be part of a collaboration of Extinction Rebellion members and the Yes Men. The Extinction Rebellion calls itself a nonviolent civil disobedience group that is devoted to climate justice. The Yes Men is a prankster duo that was started by Andy Bickelbaum and Mike Bonanno, and they've since grown to train other people to do this in what they call laftivism.
What-divism? Say that again.
Laftivism. Like, they are using humor, as they say, to expose wrongdoing in their mind. Mm. And so this duo has infiltrated press conferences and destroyed brands by posing as these companies or as government officials. And they say that this is all an attempt to reveal the truth and then to portray things in a different light to get people to think about it more.
And do they think it works? I have to say they fooled me. I thought it was from Husky. And I did not pay that much attention to it because it didn't seem urgent. It seemed like, oh, they're announcing some community program. All right, I'll look at that at some point. And then, you know, later in the day, I got the real word that, no, this is not them at all. But I would say it's rather sophisticated, as, you know, we just heard a bit of a video that wasn't easy to make.
Right. I mean, they had, like you said, that video. They've sent out thousands of postcards. They also
okay, they got like, me to created, laugh there. Sorry. Yes.
Well, and they created like social media pages tied to this initiative. So, you know, the group said that they use private fundraising to pay for all of this, although they wouldn't say how much or from whom or who is involved. So, I mean, I think it was a pretty sophisticated attempt to fool people. Superior resident Austin Yadin said that he thinks it could be seen both ways, positive and negative, because he thinks it's important to draw attention to safety, but he believes that the refinery is taking all the precautions necessary. Another resident I spoke with, Kay McKenzie, has concerns about that refinery starting back up and resuming operations next year, but she doesn't know if, you know, this attempt would have any effect because it seems a little late right now for them to change anything in the refining process.
All right. Well, back to more traditional, if not recurring news. Six American Indian tribes have weighed in on the wolf hunt with letters to Wisconsin Senators Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson. What did they say?
Yeah, six tribes sent a letter on Wednesday to Baldwin and Johnson in opposition to their legislation to delist the wolf in the Western Great Lakes region. And both Baldwin and Johnson have said that federal protections for the wolf should be removed in this area. And Baldwin has said that the science shows the wolf has recovered in the region. But tribes are disputing that fact, and they pointed to last year's February wolf hunt when hunters killed 218 wolves in less than 3 days. And that consumed the state licensed hunters' portion of the quota and the tribe's portion of the quota and then some. And so they argue that Wisconsin's current wolf management practices are inappropriate and that they're illegal. And they fear that if the state were to once again manage the wolves and hold another hunt, that wolves would be threatened as well as tribes' federal treaty rights. And the letter was signed by Bad River, Lakota Ray, Lac du Flambeau, Red Cliff, the Mole Lakes, the Saucaga Chippewa, and St. Croix Chippewa Indians of Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, Rick, many of us are still in shock and definitely grieving over the tragic killing of the Berry family last week. There was a community-wide memorial service for them?
Yes, there was, on Sunday. A crowd of friends, family, and neighbors gathered for an evening vigil to remember and honor the memories of the Sean and Rihanna Berry family. Rihanna and Sean were found shot to death in their Duluth home Wednesday, April 20, along with their young daughters, Sadie and Shiway. At the address, the officers also found the body of Brandon Cole Skolstad, along with a 9mm handgun that police believe he used to kill his aunt, uncle, their children, and the family dog before turning the weapon on himself. While friends and neighbors are still reeling from the loss, they took time Sunday to recall the friendly and community-minded family gathering around the Barry's Little Free Library, adorned with holiday lights and flowers. Vicki Danielson, Rihanna Barry's mother, made the four-hour drive from her home in Sundberg, Minnesota. She said Rihanna first met Sean at a bar in Anchorage, Alaska, while working for AmeriCorps, and he was working in the oil fields. They corresponded for a year before a 3,500-mile road trip in a VW bus cemented their relationship. Girl Scout leader Mary Hoffman said the Barry girls and their mother were key members of the local troop heading up the annual cookie drive. They were the kind of people, she said, that made the world a better place. The funeral for the Barry family will be held Sunday at Marshall School.
And again, our thoughts are with the family and all affected by the tragedy. There was a verdict in the case of the Duluth police officer who shot through an unopened door and wounded a man.
Duluth police officer Tyler Leibfried was found not guilty last week of two felony charges stemming from the shooting through the door of an apartment building in 2020. The 30-year-old police officer is believed to be the first area officer to stand trial for an on-duty shooting. He faced counts of second-degree assault and reckless discharge of a firearm that endangers the safety of others for shooting an unarmed man, Jared File, during a domestic disturbance call at the Kingsley Heights Apartments on September 12 of 2020. The jury of seven men and five women heard closing arguments and final instructions earlier in the day, and they ended up spending about 3 hours deliberating before reaching the unanimous verdict. Prosecutor Aaron Welch said in his closing argument that the officer made a choice to shoot at an unknown target, noting he did not act in a split second, but rather waited a full 10 seconds to respond to two banging noises caused by a hatchet used to close a stubborn door. He argued Leibfried could have waited longer, attempted to communicate with his partner, gave a warning to the man inside, or attempted to escape down the hallway. Defense attorney Paul Eng argued that it was unbelievable that his client was ever charged with a crime. He said the risk of death or great bodily harm was apparent to everyone. Now, the Duluth Police Department placed Leibfried on leave after the shooting and later announced that he would remain off duty indefinitely due to a finding that he had violated the agency's use of force policy. Leibfried is said to be fighting to keep his job. Arbitration and unemployment claim hearings are both scheduled for the coming weeks. File testified during the trial and has retained a lawyer and acknowledged that he is planning to file a civil rights lawsuit against the city. So there are still several things in play here with this story.
Well, we've been speaking with Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Robin.
And you can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Sarah Kruger and Lanou. I'm Robin Washington, and as always, stay safe, everyone.
I like a man if he's good for something. Walk him to the edge, but don't give him nothing. But will he still come around, still come around, still come around?